popcorn bag, using handfuls for clustered eyes, and the bag is really flat hair.
She's beautiful, Jackson says, laughing a little.
Beautiful in the sense that she's made of nothing but snow and garbage, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't date her, Jackson says.
Not your type?
I like my snow woman with carrot noses and vanilla wafer eyes, Jackson says.
I laugh a little, surprising myself. I can't say I'll miss the snow woman when she's nothing but popcorn in a puddle. I'm obviously going to throw the shard of glass away before ditching her. But this was a nice recess from everything. Maybe that's what Jackson is. A recess from everything. Even though he's got a foot in everything, too. I guess I could say he's freedom.
Did you think of Jackson as freedom?
It doesn't matter how long I've lived in New York, but every now and again, someone suggests a restaurant that's been around forever, but whose existence still surprises me. I know the city is big, but wow, I can only imagine how shocked I would have been if I had gone out to Los Angeles. Annika is apparently a fan of Spotlight Diner across the street from Washington Square Park and the NYU dorms. It's a little more downtown than I'm used to these days, but it's a guarantee that Jackson's birthday isn't doomed. Annika and Veronica's chances of actually showing up are way higher since we're so close to where they live. If they do ditch, Jackson and I can go to the High Line, which is either a 20-minute walk or quick cab away. If I can find a cab, then a cab it is. Jackson is sitting on my right, of course. Directly across from our booth is a mirror. I've got to say, the gray dress shirt Jackson is borrowing from me doesn't look bad on him. I'm not going that far and saying it looks good because it's just as baggy on him as it is on me. But he's somehow managing not to look like he's living out of someone else's closet. It's probably too late to gift it to him for his birthday, right? Nothing would be better than the old, if you like it, you can keep it trick. Anything else I should know about Annika and Veronica? I ask him. I've gotten some basics, but not the intimate stuff. Nothing like the topics I should avoid or things that might offend them. I've been ambushed in the past that way, and it sucked.
Yeah? Anything else he should know? A girl cackles beside me.
I glance up. I recognize Annika and Veronica from the photos on Jackson's phone, but he really needs a phone with better camera quality. These two are, I'm forgetting I'm gay, stunning. They both have dark skin and are dressed like sisters in their denim tops, but that's where their physical similarities end. Annika has long braided hair and a lean, muscular frame, probably from running track. Veronica's hair is shaved, and she's got piercings in her nose, left eyebrow, ears, and the corner of her lower lip.
Happy birthday, Annika says.
Veronica cheers. Jackson slides out of the booth and tries to hug Annika first, but Veronica sneaks in, squeezing his midriff.
I'm so happy you made it, he says.
I wouldn't miss it for the apocalypse, Veronica says.
For the 1,000th time this week? That doesn't make sense.
Retire it, Annika says, shoving Veronica out of the way to hug Jackson.
You're basically admitting you're otherwise open to watching the world burn.
For the 1,000th time this week, the world often sucks, and I can either burn with my eyes closed or watch it all turn to ash for a hot second, Veronica says. She settles into the booth without saying anything to me. Annika waves Veronica off and turns to me.
Griffin, right? I'm Annika.
Hi. I stand and shake her hand before falling back into my seat.
The other woman, Veronica says, so to speak.
I'm not the other. I was the first.
She's kidding,
Annika says with a dark look at her friend sliding in beside her.
She's not funny, but she's kidding.
I'm not laughing, and I won't fake laugh. Jackson sits back down slowly, as if he's suddenly unsure if this was a good idea. But his smile doesn't waver.
It's really good to see you both. How was Thanksgiving? How have classes been? What's going on?
He's only asked 3 questions, and before I can jump in to nudge him to ask a 4th, Annika and Veronica fire off answers.
Thanksgiving was weird without you. No one ate my mom's cranberry stuffing, Veronica pipes up, casually reading the menu.
But everyone understands why you weren't there, Annika adds.
My mom sends her condolences, obviously.
How are you
Classes are okay, Veronica interrupts. We're partying a lot with the theater crew. We're not failing any classes yet either, so that's a plus. NYU is putting together a production of what's basically a hipster version of Peter Pan. Annika and I are going to go head-to-head for Wendy, even though she can no doubt steal the role of Captain Hook from this dude Jeremy if she wanted. Annika stops the waiter.
Hi, could we get some waters and a muzzle for this one?
The waiter steps away.
You're talking 10 times too much.
I would say 20 times too much. I don't understand how Jackson can miss someone so self-absorbed and insensitive. I also don't believe you actually enjoyed playing card games with this girl. Annika seems chill, no doubt. But there's no way you left your hangout with Veronica and turned to Jackson and said, I love her, let's be sure to do that again.
I'm just excited, Veronica says.
I haven't seen Jack in a while.
Jackson, he corrects. Only Theo called me that.
Besides my dad, you're the only one I let call me Griff. Jackson and I both gave you that intimacy. You're gone, and so are Griff and Jack, dead with you.
There's no way I could have known that, Veronica says.
Maybe if you actually showed up to our Skype dates, you would, Jackson says. He doesn't sound angry, just disappointed. I'm not sure if Jackson is the angry type. I'm still learning.
Listen, Jackson, is it okay if I call you Jackson?
Veronica leans forward.
You could have moved out here with us. You decided to stay back home and go to school.
Go to a school where there are better programs for me, Jackson interrupts.
Let's not do this, Annika says.
She turns to me, apologetic.
Animation isn't that bad out here. I know a guy who loves it, Veronica says.
Good for him. I don't want to attend a school where animation class isn't that bad. I'm sorry my school didn't offer productions of hipster Wizard of Oz.
Peter Pan, Veronica corrects.
But I respected you moving out here to do what was best for you. I knew you and Annika would get closer once you started rooming together, but I didn't think I would be so squeezed out.
Veronica glances out the windows as if bored. I'm surprised you noticed anything, considering you were always with Theo.
I don't like where this is going. Someone's going to say something stupid, something unforgivable. I'm still anxious from the 3 questions Jackson asked that pretty much started this mess. I'm openly scratching my palms on the table, hoping Jackson will notice and cease fire. But he doesn't even acknowledge the waiter, who comes by to take our order, and just as quickly steps away so as not to get caught up in the crossfire.
Theo was always there for me, Jackson says.
Veronica claps. Good going on Theo, then. You both were in the same city. I stopped making as much of an effort with our Skype dates and texting you back once your relationship with Theo hyperdrove into this serious thing we couldn't possibly understand but were simply expected to.
I get it. I was with you during all your rejections and heartbreak in high school, and you picked up some cute guy on the highway, and it was magical and totally worth blogging about. I get the obsession, but don't pin this all on me. You're at fault too, Jackson.
He blinks at her.
You have no interest in actually being friends, do you? Don't pity me because of Theo.
His voice cracks.
Mine would roar.
Veronica shakes her head.
There's no pity. Don't try and twist this into me hating you because I didn't love your boyfriend as much as you did.
I'm sad for you, of course, but I didn't know the guy. We played cards once, and it was nothing but inside jokes between you two.
There are so many emotions rocketing through me during this ping pong. Jealousy over and curiosity about the inside jokes, even though we have our own.
probably 10 times as many. Rage for how she's making you sound so insignificant. Sympathy for Jackson, who, like me, is grieving and, also like me, could really go for friends who didn't act like assholes during this particular time. Confusion as to why Annika hasn't shut this down, and how everything could spiral out of control so quickly.
"I was making him feel welcome and comfortable," Jackson says.
"That was our job," Veronica says, rolling her eyes. "You didn't trust us to try and get to know him.
You hogged him to yourself. We honestly felt like you only felt obligated to hang with us because you were in town."
Jackson turns to Annika.
"You thought this way too? With everything she's saying?"
"God, no, definitely not everything she's saying," Annika shakes her head, then shrugs.
"But I agree with a lot of it. I love you, Jackson, but you put this relationship before everyone and everything else. I'm not mad at you. College and distance will do that to people, but we've had a lot going on over here too, before Theo. We've had a lot going on, and we felt weird not being able to tell you. But honestly, we couldn't risk your not putting in the friend time it would ask of you. There would be no coming back from that."
"Let's drop it," Veronica says. "Let's just keep texting over who's seen the latest episode of whatever dumb show we're all binging on and keep our tragedies to ourselves." Now, I'm positive that I don't like where this is going, has already gone. I'm fidgety. I scratch and scratch my palms. I try to relax the tick in my neck, rotating it like usual, but it's traveling down to my shoulders and spine, so I'm doing all sorts of stretches. I flick my wrists, weirdly tense as if I've been up late writing essays. I crack all my knuckles and even double-check to make sure they're all cracked. I'm discomfort personified.
"Definitely don't tell me if it's about your recent breakup with the latest love of your life," Jackson says.
"I saw your status switch from in a relationship to single on Facebook. I'm all caught up there. At least he's still alive."
"Jackson, don't," Annika says.
Veronica's face twists in a way I would have never assumed possible from all the deliriously happy photos I saw of her online.
"Did my Facebook status mention I broke up with the latest love of my life because of the abortion I had to have? Did my Facebook status tell you all about how I wasn't ready to be a mom, and he wasn't ready to be a dad, and how we agreed this was a bad time, that we would go to the clinic together and he would hold my hand through this? Did my Facebook status tell you he didn't show up and hasn't responded to any of my texts? My texts certainly weren't very nice, but the campus psychologist I've been seeing to deal with my guilt seems to think they were fair."
Veronica gets up. Her eyes are wide, and she's trembling. Annika clears out of her way.
"I didn't wish you any ill," she says, leaning over the table. "I know you must have been hurting in ways I don't know. But even when Theo was still alive, I lost a part of myself and lost a little person who was growing inside of me and was going to look like me. You will never get to be Uncle Jackson. I'll never get to be this kid's mom. Next time you see my relationship status change on Facebook, maybe check in and ask if I'm okay."
Before any of us can say a word, Veronica whirls and runs out into the night. There's silence, a blast of wintry air. The door closes behind her.
"I had no..."
Jackson is crying and, damn, I'm almost there with him. It's fair to say he had no idea, but it's also fair to admit he could have known. I see myself in him more than ever right now. It's almost as if we're made of the same messed up clockwork, ticking and ticking out of balance.
"She'll punch me if I chase after her, right?"
"Is a punch really the worst thing that can happen to you right now?" Annika asks him. Jackson's head drops.
"If you're not going to go after her, I should," Annika says.
She leans over and gives Jackson a quick hug.
Let me know when you're leaving town. We should try and, well, not do this again. But we should catch up.
She waves to me.
I'm sorry we didn't get to talk more.
She rests her hand on Jackson's shoulder.
Happy birthday.
She rushes off.
I suck,
Jackson says. He wipes his eyes with his sleeve. The waiter cautiously steps over. Are you two going to order? I tell him we're going to leave and apologize for the holdup. I leave a 10 and usher Jackson out. I'm relieved my anxiety is going away, probably because I'm freezing to death once we're back outside. I have to force Jackson's arms back into my dad's coat while he's crossing the street, heading in the complete opposite direction from the train station.
I'm the worst, Jackson says. I had no idea, but I could have called.
You don't suck, I tell him. That whole thing sucked. We will never know what she's going through.
But she also has no idea what we're going through.
This isn't some competition about who gets to be more upset.
Damn, grief is complicated enough without wondering how someone else is handling their own shade of it.
Which way is the High Line? He asks, sniffling. His nose is already red. I respect Jackson's silence as we walk toward 10th Avenue. I try to convince Jackson to let us take a cab, but whenever I stop to hail one, he keeps going. If he's reacting like this for offending his friend, I can only imagine what happened when he lost hold of you in the ocean. I still can't bring myself to ask him about that day. Your death is proof that I shouldn't blindly trust these false promises of more years and months and weeks and tomorrows and hours and minutes just because I'm young. And I know Jackson is the only person who can fill in the blanks for me on the afternoon you drowned. He's the only one who can delete all the horrific things I've imagined once and for all. If Jackson goes, those answers will be gone forever. But I still can't get myself to go there, to press him on what it was like to be by your side when you died, what it was like to watch the lifeguard try and pump oxygen into your corpse. Honestly, Theo, I'm scared the truth might actually be more painful than my imagination. Jackson is shivering and hugging his chest by the time we make it to the High Line. But if his legs are as stiff as mine, he's soldiering through, following me up the stairs to the top. I've never seen the High Line during winter. I wish Jackson could see the train tracks, but there's a pretty cool quality to the white dusted potted plants and snow-covered wooden seats. I hope in your lifetime you once managed to stroll through here during winter, even though I think you would have told me if you had. Jackson doesn't seem to appreciate the wonder or to care about being up here at all. He walks straight to the railing and stares down at the traffic. The wind hurts. It's a lot colder up here than down on the streets. I should have stopped Veronica, right? I should have apologized and cried with her and asked her how she's doing, Jackson says. I can barely make him out over the wind. I would have done that a year ago, a month ago. I don't buy into everything she said about me being too obsessed with Theo, but I do feel really damaged without him. I keep pushing people away. I let her go. Do you feel that way too?
100%.
I stare at the traffic with him. If drivers could see the ridiculousness from our vantage point, there would be so much less honking, so many fewer snarls.
Did Theo talk about how we stopped speaking to Wade? I ask him.
Jackson shakes his head.
Not much. It happened over the summer, right?
Yeah. Theo stopped bringing you both up around that time, Jackson says. He could tell it made me uncomfortable. I'm sorry.
I nod.
It's so damn cold. I really wish we were having this conversation indoors. I get it. There were times it felt like he was trying to avoid saying your name, too.
What a mess,
you've left behind, Theo. The mess isn't your fault, it's mine and Jackson's, but man, this is dirty business here.
All I know is they got into an argument, Jackson says. Why did you stop talking to him?
Loyalty to Theo, I say. And now that I can turn to Wade, I don't. I think we're pushing people away because if we can't have Theo, we don't want anyone else.
But I'm letting you in. I wasn't counting on that.
We're both fading from ourselves, I think.
We're exactly what I hated in Veronica not even an hour ago.
He doesn't agree or disagree.
I grab Jackson's arm and drag him away from the railing, the moon to our backs. We hurry down the stairs and dive into the first available cab, our bodies shaking and teeth chattering. The driver has the heater up as high as it will go. And it's either very weak or my body was minutes away from turning into an ice block.
How can I make this right, Griffin?
There are no easy answers here. This won't be as simple as an apology. Jackson and I are broken, in desperate need of repair, but the only mechanic we're interested in seeing is our favorite person. And you're clocked out forever.
I don't think we're in a good place to try and fix friendships right now in our current state, I answer. I'm honestly not sure if this is some lie to make it easier or an uncomfortable truth, but it's where I stand. Maybe if we keep letting things crash and burn, everything else is bound to fall back in place.
Or maybe the fire will grow.
History. Wednesday, August 26th, 2015.
Once we're sure his parents aren't coming back upstairs, just in case they forgot their car keys or wallets or something, Theo and I throw off our clothes as if they're on fire. We jump into bed. This is the last time we're going to be naked together for months, and I'm not going to let those boxes of his folded clothes and belongings ruin that. We've been dating long enough that whenever we do have time to sneak some sex in, we don't usually spend that much time kissing, but this afternoon is different. Theo is kissing with force and hunger, and everything about this feels very final to me. I lock my arms around him, like a wrestler grappling an opponent, and I never want to let him go, because I know what has to happen next. Friday, August 28th, 2015. I'm quiet, as Theo, Wade, and I walk to the post office to ship Theo's four boxes to California. Theo's flight is tonight, and already I can't keep it together. If I open my mouth, I'm not sure what will come out. Theo and Wade seem fine, though, talking about the second Avengers movie instead of using this time to reminisce. They'll regret it later. I already am. The post office is another block down, just across the street.
I'd Hulk smash you right now if it gave me the ability to run like Quicksilver to California, Thea tells Wade. I could even race my packages there.
What the hell? Why can't you Hulk smash some stranger? Wade asks.
Theo laughs.
Pulverize some nameless citizen? That's not the Captain America spirit. He can't be your favorite character anymore. Your new favorite is Daredevil, the Ben Affleck version.
He steps off the curb, turning around to see Wade's face.
I'm gonna miss your bullying. Dude, watch!
A car honks its horn and Theo stops walking backward in the street.
Theo, move! I scream.
Theo turns around and sees the car. He bullets forward toward the post office, tripping over the boxes he's dropped, falling flat on the street. The car swerves with a screech at the last moment, nearly hitting Wade and me, and brakes at the corner. The driver gets out. He's in a rage, shouting at Theo for being reckless and stupid, but I block out everything he's saying. All that exists is Theo. I run and kneel beside him. He's staring up at me, but I don't think he really sees me. I hug him, reassuring him over and over he's okay, reassuring myself over and over he's okay, he's okay, he's okay, he's okay, he's okay. He's going to be okay.
and I'm going to have to be okay, too. I help Theo up while Wade talks the driver down, convincing him to back off, to get back in his car and forget the whole thing. I lead Theo to the post office, where we both lean against the wall by the entrance, sinking to the ground. I grab his hand and rest my head against his shoulder. I should tell him I love him, or how I don't know what I would have done if that car ran him down. But I don't. I think we should break up, Theo.
Theo jerks, but doesn't let go of my hand. He snapped out of his shock.
What?
I've been thinking about this the past couple of days. I'm scared I'm going to be holding you back somehow, I say.
You're not, Theo says. That's ridiculous.
I can't risk it. I can't risk getting in your way.
You're not in my way, Griff. You're the reason I even got my essay done.
That's not true, and he knows it. He would have gotten it done without me. I'm not the reason he qualified for early admission in the first place. That's all him in his brain.
Everything is going to change when we're not in each other's faces. You know it. I'm not saying we should stop being friends. I want everything to make sense. And there's something not right with... I can't do this. There's something not right with trying to play the long-distance game for 2 years.
So... You don't love me anymore, Griff. We haven't looked each other in the eye this entire conversation. I'm staring at the cigarette butts on the curb. Wade has the common sense to hang out by the mailbox on the corner and leave us alone. I shake my head against Theo's shoulder. It's the opposite. My throat tightens.
You're screwed, because I'm never going to stop loving you. I'm counting on us getting back together when our lives fit better. You're endgame for me. But you have to promise me you're not going to be stupid and walk into traffic. Don't die at all. Okay?
Fine. I'll never die, Theo says, hugging me closer to him.
I mean it. Promise me.
I promise you. I'll never die.
I sit up and turn his head to mine, kissing him and squeezing his hand. I'm doing the right thing. He's going to focus on himself and figure out the life he wants, and hopefully I'm in that picture. I'm going to be okay. Theo's crying a little and initiates our kisses. The butterfly kiss, the caveman kiss. One where we stay pressed against each other's forehead way longer than usual. The Eskimo kiss, which breaks me. That makes me start crying, too. And finally, the zombie kiss.
I'm eating your tears, Theo says, laughing. Gross.
I laugh with him. I really hope I'm right. How this is best for him. It would suck if this is the last time we're ever going to be this close to each other. It already sucks how I'm breaking my own heart for his happiness. But if he's happy... I'm happy. Right? Today, Thursday, December 8th, 2016. I'm sitting on someone's right during free period. My breaths are tightening. I'm so itchy, it's as if an army of ants is launching an assault on my body. I want to scream, but I'm in the library, the place of mandatory silence. A freak-out free zone. It's one more thing I can't control. I try and keep calm by scratching my palm, but the whole thing is ridiculous. I can't bury my anxiety deep in my hand, like a dog in his used-up bone in a backyard. I thought this seat was a better spot than the other last seat available, which is to the left of Wade. I don't know the guy next to me, but the more and more I try to avoid Wade's eyes as he peeks at me from across the room, the more and more I get to know the guy a little better. Like how he hums songs I don't know and nibbles on his pen cap. These little facts are enough to turn him into a capital P person, a person who's on my left, a person who should be on my right. I have to ask him to switch seats. It's what I should have done in the first place. I know myself. I should have known that the more and more I push thoughts about Wade and his own grief aside, and how guilty I feel he's suffering alone, the more and more I was going to zoom in on someone else. I lean over, which feels bizarre. I really wish you or Jackson were here right now to distract me from all of this. Hey, can we switch seats? The pen cup falls out of the guy's mouth.
What?
Can we trade seats? I'm eager to get this resolved, eager to be where I belong, eager to get these ant-like itches off of me, eager to get my temperature back down, eager to be out of Wade's sight, eager to be invisible. He points to a phone connected to an outlet.
My phone is charging.
You can leave it there.
Yeah, right.
No one's trying to steal your phone.
Says you.
Are you a freshman?
Sophomore?
That explains his arrogance. Just give me your seat.
Why?
I shouldn't have to explain my compulsion to him, but he has what I want. But he's a stranger who knows nothing about me. But maybe he won't be such an asshole if I gave him the chance to understand. But maybe people should be kind without reason.
It's personal, I say. I personally want to keep an eye on my phone, he says.
I stand and kick my seat back, losing control of myself in this controlled environment.
You're not even supposed to have your phone on you.
The sophomore leans back, surprised, maybe a little frightened. The new librarian approaches with caution. She doesn't know I'm not normally some troublemaker, and I doubt she's going to know how to handle me either.
See, now we're both going to get written up, I tell the sophomore.
I bet you anything I'm sitting to his left in detention. Then I see Wade rushing toward me, his backpack and textbooks abandoned at his desk. I'm catching fire. The librarian is about to say something, but Wade jumps in between us.
I'm sorry about him,
Wade says, and his apology makes it sound like he's sorry for my entire existence.
He's grieving right now.
The librarian's eyes widen. She nods in understanding about who I am. I wonder how she knows. I'm not close with her. But, on the other hand, I would have bet everything that for the past few days I've stunk of grief and looked like a poster boy for depression.
I understand, and I'm sorry for your loss, but you have to keep it down in the library, or...
We're going right now. Wade grabs me by the shoulders and steers me out into the hall. I take a deep breath, ready to cry.
I shake him off. Don't touch me.
How are you doing? You don't answer any texts or calls?
Take a hint, then.
I'm not going to back off, knowing the state you're in, Wade says. He rubs his eyes.
I knew Theo, too, for longer than you, but okay, you're not being fair treating me like I fucking held Theo's head underwater, and...
I turn left and run. If I don't run, this hallway will become a crime scene. He shouts his apology from that unbelievably dickheaded thing he just said, but I keep going. Wade has never been good with words, but now I can't get this visual out of my head of you, out on the ocean, being drowned by the person you trusted the most before I came around. I'm getting the hell out of here, off this floor, out of this building. I almost trip going down the stairs, and I half wish I did and broke my neck.
I'm sorry. That's not okay to say.
You know I would never give up on life like that, especially knowing yours was stolen. I would never just press a button and power myself down. I run to my locker. Remembering my combination is hard, but my fingers turn the dial and do their thing. I grab my coat and slam the locker shut, charging to a side entrance.
The dean is coming down the stairs. No running, Griffin!
I don't stop. I rush past her and push open the door. She calls for me, chasing after me with no jacket or sweater, but I lose her quickly. I run through the street, almost slipping because of the slush. And I run into the train station and text my dad to let him know I'm coming home and never going back to that place. This all happened because someone was sitting on my left. We're all gathered in the living room, discussing what went down at school. Jackson is sitting to my right, as it should be,
and my parents are sitting across from us on the chairs they dragged over from the dining room table. Everyone has calmed down, myself included. I wasn't surprised to learn from Jackson that my mom was freaking out after she got the call from my dad telling him I ditched. "You're staying home from school tomorrow with me," my mom says. She's trying to make eye contact with me, but I continue staring at the TV, even though it's off. "You're too vulnerable in that environment right now." "I don't want to go back next week either," I say. "I'm done pretending anything I do in class actually matters for my future. I could ace all my classes like you did and complete all my homework assignments and still find myself the victim of a random and fatal accident. If you knew you were going to die young, would you have spent as much time studying, Theo?" "I bet $2 you would have, actually. But we're different. I can't even sit on someone's right without having a panic attack." "Okay. We can see how you're feeling on Monday," Mom says. Dad nods. He looks worried. Not that I can blame him.
"We understand how hard it is being somewhere where you spent so much time with Theo," he says.
"He's right, but school isn't the only place I spent so much time with you." He turns to my mom.
"Maybe next semester we can get Griff transferred to another school. Fresh start."
"This isn't some out of sight, out of mind thing," I say. "It's Theo."
Jackson nods. "Transferring is too easy. I've thought about it too, but it feels wrong. Like I'm trying to forget him."
My parents look at each other. They've always had a way of wordlessly consulting. They're honestly both good cops. The closest my dad has ever come to playing bad cop was when he shrugged Jackson off after meeting him. But now it's my mom's turn.
"Jackson, would you mind if we speak to Griffin alone for a second? We need to talk to him about something sensitive."
"Whatever you're going to tell me, I'm just going to tell him," I say.
"It's okay," Jackson says. "It's a family meeting. I get it. Sorry."
He gets up and heads straight into my room, closing the door behind him.
"That wasn't called for," I say.
Mom looks at me.
"We've been very accommodating, but I'm honestly not sure if Jackson's being here is what's best for you right now," she says. "You're going through a huge loss."
"Jackson is the only one who understands," I interrupt.
"And it might be time for Jackson to go home to give you a more stable environment. More importantly, we need you to see a real therapist."
She stands and takes Jackson's seat, your seat, beside me. My parents rarely falter on this left versus right business, thankfully. You never did either.
"If Jackson's presence is affecting your compulsions, it's a problem. Regardless, you need to see a therapist and psychiatrist soon." "I can't tell them that I'll be fine, that there's really nothing wrong with me. I hate even recognizing myself as wrong.
But I also doubt words and exposure therapy will make the compulsion stop. I think it'll be the opposite, like seeing a psychiatrist will only drag the compulsions more into focus. The real problem is that my parents are too normal to understand this."
"You can't make me," I say, and I know I have them there. There's no way they can punish me any more than I already punished myself. "Therapy isn't a bad thing, or anything to be ashamed of," Mom says.
She reaches for me.
"There you go." I shake her hand away and go to my room. If she wants to go see a mental health professional and report back on how I'm supposed to be doing according to the 7 stages of grief, whatever bullshit they'll feed her, she can be my guest. I don't need that in my life any more than I do Wade's telling me everything about you I already know. I just need you and Jackson. I close the door behind me and throw myself onto my bed. Jackson is sitting on the air mattress, texting someone. "They want me to go, don't they?" I don't answer him, which says everything. "It's okay. Don't get mad at them. It's probably for the best anyway. It's like we said out there that we have to face Theo, wherever he is. We can't hide from him.
But Theo lived in New York, I say. I sit up. I can't believe my parents have made Jackson so uncomfortable he's ready to go. Sending me to a different school isn't going to change that.
But I don't live here, Jackson says quietly. Theo isn't here for me the way he is for you.
He wobbles from the center of the deflating air mattress to the edge and sits with his elbows on his knees. I already texted my dad, and he's looking into getting me a ticket this weekend. It might be hard because of the snow and cancellations, but we'll see.
So, that's it, then. Once he's gone, I know I'm going to end up back in that black hole of worthlessness. I can already feel his support being sucked away. I lie back down and stare up at the ceiling.
Jackson fills the silence with a list of everything he's been missing back home anyway, always in pairs because, like you, he's grown hyper-conscious of my needs. He misses his mom, a lot, and dad, a little. His dog and the runs they go on. His bedroom. Your dorm room. His school halls and classrooms. Not enough to resume classes, though. His car and driving in general. The sun and sleeveless shirts, iced coffee and popsicles, digging his toes into the grass at the park and into the sand at the beach. I would miss all that stuff, too, I say. Even though a lot of it is alien to me, closer to an alternate universe you'd create than my reality. I don't know what it's like to have the freedom of a parent-free space, like a dorm room, where you could have come over without us feeling like there was a spotlight on what we were doing. I don't know anything about getting behind the wheel of my own car, or any car, and deciding my own path, wasting as much gas as I want, because it's gas I bought with my own money. I don't even know what it's like to have a dog. But I can't fault Jackson for missing the things I do get, like my toes in the grass, drinking iced tea, the heat I feel on my arms and the back of my neck when I'm in a tank top, and even something as annoying as shielding my eyes from the sun, because I'll take brightness and sweat over darkness and chills anytime. Jackson takes a deep breath.
It's almost been 1 month.
I know.
This is for the best. It may sound stupid, but I want to be back home on that day, Jackson says.
I envy him so much. He gets to go back to his land of sunshine, where in spite of the pain, good memories of you will greet him. I'm doomed to freezing weather that will keep me trapped in my room, alone with impulsive thoughts I don't want to act on. I almost joke how it'll be nice to have my room back to myself. How I hated competing for shower time with him anyway. But they're lies. Jackson is not my enemy. He's filled cold silences with warm stories, even if those stories sometimes hit too close and burned me. Jackson gets up and approaches my bed.
Can I sit?
I've been really good about not letting him on my bed. He's never asked. I've never invited. He's always chilled on the bedside chair or the air mattress. But I'm vulnerable, so without moving an inch from my current position, I turn my eyes away from the ceiling to his and say yes. He sits down at the edge of my bed, not pushing his luck by getting too comfortable.
Thanks for letting me stay here, Griffin.
Seriously, I still feel broken. That's not your fault. That sounds bad. But I don't feel like a million different pieces anymore. I'm never expecting to feel whole again.
I don't think you are either. I hate the idea of leaving you here alone.
He shuts up, and his silence isn't the same silence I'm okay with, the one where he and I don't have to say anything and are just cool with someone being around.
Are you going to be okay?
That's when it comes to me, out of nowhere. Like those genius epiphanies you had all the time. I'm possessed with brilliance.
I'll go with you. You can show me what Theo's life was like out there. We could keep each other company on the 13th.
Saying these words out loud, I feel like I'm flying right out of that black hole.
Would your parents let you go?
I can work it out with them. Are you cool with me going with you?
Absolutely, Jackson smiles. Let me text my dad. He pulls out his phone, but I throw my arms around his neck, and his arms wrap around my waist. I should pull away, but I don't. Friday, December 9th, 2016. I've missed family hangouts since the divorce, Jackson tells my parents over dinner, his farewell dinner, as my dad put it. We're buttering them up now in the hopes they'll let me go with him on Monday. This is back before my parents took shots at each other, obviously, but for the most part it was cool catching them up about my day. I think I've missed home-cooked meals even more, though. The steak tacos really lived up to their glory, Mr. Jennings. Glad to hear, my dad says, wiping his mouth clean of salsa. But seriously, call me Gregor.
You got it, Gregor.
Thank you again for understanding, Jackson, Mom says. It's been wonderful having you around the house. It truly isn't personal. We just want Griffin back on track, and the same for you as well.
Jackson nods.
I can't thank you all enough for letting me camp out here. It's time for me to figure out my next moves at home, too. I'm scratching my palms. I want to go with him for a couple of days. It's almost 1 month since Theo died, and I want to be in California with Jackson for it. It's not like I'm going back to school right now, and...
Your time off isn't a vacation, Mom interrupts.
I wouldn't call grieving Theo a vacation.
I'm sorry. That's not what I meant, but I'm sorry. But your recess from classes has been suggested so you can relax somewhere familiar.
You've never been to California, Mom says.
I know a lot about California from everything you've told me, from everything Jackson has told me. I know from my own research when I was considering going to college out there to be reunited with you. I know from common sense.
Have you outgrown your fear of flying? Dad asks. If you had a panic attack in your library, we can't trust you to be okay up in the air for several hours.
I'm about to suggest I take a sleeping pill when more excuses come my way. They can't afford a plane ticket on such short notice, especially given the money they're saving for my therapy sessions. They don't care that Jackson's dad has already booked us both tickets. Neither of them can take off work right now to accompany me, like I'm some kid on a field trip in need of a chaperone instead of a 17-year-old who would be staying with Jackson's mom.
I'm not comfortable with this, Mom says.
Me either, Dad says.
Well, I'll be uncomfortable here once Jackson leaves, I say. I don't get how they haven't seen a difference in me. I've been able to watch a little TV without feeling guilty for not grieving and crying. I'm in a place again where I can imagine myself laughing again, really laughing, with tears in my eyes and everything. Besides, I want to see your dorm room, your favorite places, the places you avoided. I even want to visit the beach where you died. I really want to see what Theo's life was like out there. I swear, I'll give therapy a shot if you let me go.
Mom grabs my hand. Therapy has to come first, Griffin. We don't like trying to pressure you into this, but we all have to face the truth here. You need to see someone professionally. You'll be able to visit Jackson in California when you're feeling better. I'm sorry.
She releases me and begins clearing the table. I was delusional to think they'd let me go, but at least I asked.
It would have been nice to leave with their permission. Oh, well.
Saturday, December 10th, 2016. In the cemetery, Jackson and I pass a lot of elaborate headstones carved from rocks of different colors, their sharp angles poking out like the skeleton limbs buried beneath them. Maybe the families wanted to throw down as much money as possible to get the best headstone in the catalog, one final splurge on the one they lost. Even though your headstone is pretty standard, flat-faced, gray, only knee-high. To me, it stands out better than all the others, almost as if it would glow in the dark. I want to kneel before it, but then I realize I'm stepping on you. This is the closest we've been physically since November 21st, when we buried you. I don't want to think about the state of your body under this frozen dirt.
but I can't help it.
This feels right, Jackson says.
Thanks for bringing me here. I can't think of a better way to spend my last weekend in New York.
Do you think you'll ever come back? I ask him. Maybe to make things right with Veronica and visit Annika?
I still can't believe Annika never made time to talk things out with Jackson. There's no way he could have known about Veronica's abortion. If these are his friends, maybe he needs new ones. Maybe that's me. Maybe that's why he was drawn to you.
Yeah, I would want to see you, too, Jackson says.
There's a flash of warmth in my face before the cold wind shoos it away. It's weird, right? Us? Not bad weird anymore, but still weird when you think about how much time we spent trying not to be friends. Every morning I wake up without Theo. I think about how strange it is that I'm waking up in your room. It always takes a second to click, no offense. None taken. I'm the same way. I want to ask you something, and you can't lie to me or avoid answering because we're pretty much standing on Theo right now, and that's deeper than swearing on a Bible.
Shoot.
Jackson doesn't even stop to consider this like I would have.
Did you worry Theo would ever break up with you and get back together with me?
Competing against his first love was so impossible sometimes, Jackson says.
I know Theo would never cheat on me, but if he were going to do it, I know what would have been with you.
You never told him what happened when you were here in June without him, did you?
Sorry, that's taboo, even now.
Jackson bounces a little to warm up. If it's any consolation, I don't think I would have had it in me to be his friend if we'd broken up. I would have wanted him in my life, but I wouldn't have been able to stand it. I would have said goodbye. I don't know how you survived this.
I'm not sure I actually did survive it.
Look at me now, Theo. I'm about to run away from home and get on a plane, two things that had never crossed my mind to do.
Maybe I will need therapy when I get back.
I'm shattered and empty. I'm loyal to the end. But that's the heart of my problem. I may soon be Jackson's, too. When exactly is the end?
Sunday, December 11th, 2016. Jackson is folding his clothes, packing for the flight tomorrow.
Are you sure you want to go? There's no turning around once the plane takes off.
He's whispering. But I almost panic that my parents will overhear us.
Then I remember they're both napping, or having sex, whatever, in their bedroom.
I'm definitely going. You're more scared of them than I am.
Jackson puts his shirts in his bag.
I don't want to piss them off. I like them.
If you snitch on me, I'll end you, I say.
Not snitching. I really want you out there with me. It's the only reason I'm not completely freaking out right now.
I'm not freaking out either, and I'm not sure why. Maybe because I'm committed. I'll have to lie in the worst way possible and scare the shit out of my parents to get out there, but I'll call them the second Jackson and I land so they know I'm safe. I'll fly home on Wednesday, and I'll be punished forever, but it's worth it. I have to see how you lived. The doorbell rings. Let me get that. I rush out of bed and open the door to find Wade standing there with an aluminum tray. I can smell cupcakes. He baked them for my birthday this year. I can see one of the ties you bought him peeking out from underneath his coat.
Sorry to stop by unannounced, Wade says. You weren't answering my texts, and I wanted to see how you were doing since Thursday.
His voice trails off. Jackson comes out of my room with an empty glass on his way to the kitchen. He waves.
Wade, hey, how's it going?
Wade's eyes narrow. He turns away from Jackson and back to me.
What the hell is going on?
He's quiet, but the question sinks in as if he's shouted it.
You won't talk to me, but you're hanging out with the guy that made your life hell?
My lips feel dry. Things have changed, I say.
I want to close the door on him. Wade closes his eyes, fighting back tears, and shakes his head. Clearly, you're no longer suffering alone, unlike me. Real nice, Griffin. You're so fucking selfish.
I should tell Wade about the trip. But he might react the same way as my parents. I can't risk this for him. I am selfish.
Wade drops the tray at my feet. Hope you both enjoy. He storms away and slams the door behind him, the noise echoing through the hallway. I can't chase after him, Theo. I have to get ready. I have a flight to catch. Monday, December 12th, 2016. Can you believe it, Theo? I'm in an airplane, ready to take off. I'm going to California with Jackson, and I'm fighting back a freakout. I have to keep it together before I get kicked off, before I prove my parents right that I'm probably not in the best state to be doing this. I'm not a fan of what I had to do. Jackson hates it too, but it didn't stop him from pulling the cab over a couple of blocks away after he said goodbye to me and my family so I could join him. I only have a small backpack with me. My parents think it's full of books and notebooks for a fake trip to the coffee shop to work on makeup assignments. It's actually stuffed with shirts, underwear, a phone charger, and a toothbrush. I have the other essentials in my wallet: cash, starter debit card, ID, ticket. I hope you'll forgive me for lying. I'm doing it for you. We're in row 14, and I'm seat number one. Good row number, okay seat number. But this panic attack has been crawling my way since we arrived at the airport. I didn't count on all the lines and the brief flight delay. I tried buckling my seatbelt, but it's different than car seatbelts, and Jackson assists me without asking, which startles me for a second because he's so close to my dick. But within seconds he's done, and I'm fastened in. I can't help but feel as if he's trapped me here, like a straitjacket. How are you doing? Jackson asks. I shake my head and twist my ring finger, the trick you taught me. Jackson reaches into his backpack and pulls out a copy of last month's Entertainment Weekly. This'll help you take your mind off of it. I go straight for the movie reviews, but in no time a flight attendant calls for our attention and delivers all sorts of safety instructions about where to find oxygen masks and how to locate exit doors. Jackson is reading his own magazine, which annoys me a little because he's responsible for me on this flight. Do you have this memorized? He answers me by quoting the flight attendant and mimicking her movements. I've flown a few times, Jackson says. We're going to be okay. Within minutes, the plane is moving down the runway, and it feels like driving down the highway. Except cars don't pick up speed the way this plane does. Cars never make me so nervous that I grab the door handle the way I'm gripping the armrest. Cars don't shake violently like this. Cars definitely don't lift at the front and take off into the air. Jackson's hand rests on top of mine, hesitantly. I don't pull away, and his hand expands, holding mine. How are you feeling? The plane swerves left, and I'm certain this is it. We're going to crash. I look out the window during this shift, and it's sad how this plane didn't even get high enough to make the people in the freezing city below seem small. Like ants in the snow. The plane finds its center. The captain announces our flight will be a little over 5 hours, and that attendants will be around shortly with refreshments.
That's it? I ask.
That's it, Jackson says, releasing my hand. My heart is still thumping. Were you ever scared to fly? It's probably better for me to answer this after we land. We're already up in the air. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen, I say.
You're not going to parachute out of here? Jackson asks.
I have no idea how to get out of the seatbelt. I'm not going anywhere.
I still get really nervous, and I'm not sure when that will stop, he admits.
It's weird, because my dad is a pilot. Or maybe that's the reason. I'm always a little on edge. This may sound selfish or horrible, but the only time I felt sort of ready for any tragedy was when I was with Theo. Was he brave on planes?
I'm asking Jackson to tell me something about you I don't know while I'm flying. What a day, huh?